Wednesday, September 21st, 2016. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together every single Wednesday, talk some sports, give you some insight, hopefully make some sense of everything that goes on in the sports world. I hear from a number of listeners that say they tune in. Maybe they're not even sports fans. Maybe they just want to be able to keep up with the talk around the office or keep up with the talk with their spouse or whatever it may be. Hey, this is the place to go. You got to make sure that you stop by and check out the Daily Dose. If you get a chance, and we would appreciate it so much, if you would get a chance to recommend the podcast to someone, maybe you have a friend, maybe you have a coworker. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. We're a little bit of an elitist crowd here. We try to pride ourselves on being, you know, the thinking man's sports show. It's what we've been called in the past. So we don't just want the average rah-rah, knuckle-dragging moron to come in here because they're not going to get it. I'm going to be honest with you right now. That one's not going to get it. If they're the ones that go, well, the so-and-so, the Oakland Raiders didn't win this week because they just didn't want it enough. Yeah, we don't. Nah. That's not for us. That's not for us. But if you have, you know, that family member or friend or coworker that you say, yeah, maybe they're a little bit smarter than the average bear, then let's go ahead and bring them in. If you would like to recommend the show, there are a number of places you can go. You can go to iTunes. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to Podcast Republic. You can go to Google Play. You can go to Audio Boom and find the podcast. And of course, you can head over to our site, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. And in addition to the podcast, which we always do place there, you can also find a number of articles that you are going to want to check out. You know, pretty much making fun of the sports world. That's kind of what we do here. Got to make sure that you stop by dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Put up an article this week about the Cleveland Browns. Of course, the Cleveland Browns are struggling a little bit, having a little bit of a hard time. Got an article that says there are some big changes coming up for the Cleveland Browns. Also, be sure to stop by our podcast network, RogueIntel.com. A number of podcasts over on Rogue Intel that you are going to get addicted to. You are going to want to check out every single week. Today on the show, Dylan Brooks, sports writer from Cover32.com. He covers the NFL, writes about the NFL. He is going to stop by, and he is going to play with us a spirited game of overreaction or sounds about right as we take a look at week two in the NFL. Number of great games in the NFL. Get some predictions. Get some predictions for the upcoming season. Get some predictions for the upcoming week. Number of things that we want to touch on with sports writer Dylan Brooks. Plus, we do have to talk some college football. You know, there are some teams, believe it or not, that were pretty heavy favorites, pretty big favorites to do some things this year. We're just 3 weeks into the season. They might as well cancel the season. They're pretty well done. They have no shot of getting to a national championship. Like, they have no chance whatsoever. We're just 3 weeks in. Might have to discuss a little bit of Major League Baseball. Starting to get down to the playoffs in Major League Baseball. Starting to get to the postseason, which is where baseball actually starts to get interesting. I actually start watching baseball when it gets to the postseason. Might have to talk a little bit of that. And as we always do, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. Always a very popular segment here on the show. You got to make sure that you stick around for that. As promised, right now, we are joined by Cover 32 NFL writer. He'll talk some basketball too. He's not afraid to jump into that. Joined by Dylan Brooks, friend of the show. Dylan, thanks so much for joining us here on the Daily Dose. We are happy to have you.
Clint, thanks for having me. Like we were talking earlier, there's no better time of the year than right now to be a sports fan.
Oh, it's such a great time of year. I mean, we've got college football just rolling along. We've got the NFL rolling along. Baseball is actually starting to get interesting. It won't be long before the NHL and NBA start picking up. It is just the best time of year. This is Christmas for a football fan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm currently single, so I don't know how you guys out there with girlfriends and wives and mistresses are taking time off. I mean, it seems like almost every night there's a game that must be watched.
Well, that's the key. That is the key, is you got to make sure that you set the priorities right up front in those relationships. Otherwise, you're getting yourself in trouble. So if you have the girlfriend, you have the fiance, you have the wife, you have to say, okay, look, from September to February, here's how this is going to play out. Otherwise, you're going to get yourself in trouble.
That's a good game plan. I'll be sure to follow that in the next relationship I get into.
Keep that in mind. Hey, on Sunday, this past Sunday, week two, you know, I didn't think it could come close to week one. We had 9 games decided by 7 points or less. Another phenomenal week two in the NFL.
Let's keep it going. Let's keep those defenses healthy and get these close games continuing on in December. I love it.
I do too. One thing I wanted to get your thoughts on, and we've talked about it just a little bit here on the Daily Dose, but this past week, the NFL pledged $100 million on the development of new technology to address the head trauma injuries. You obviously work with some, you know, NFL, you're watching the NFL. Does the NFL truly care, or does the NFL want to appear like they care about these head injuries?
I mean, I think what it stems down to, Clint, is at the first point, let's get this straight. This is a violent sport. There's
sure
no ifs, ands about it. We got guys that are 260 pounds running 4.3s. I mean, Cam Newton is the definition of this next generation of super athletes. So, yes, they're trying so hard to keep these, you know, the brain traumas down and the concussions down, and they're doing a great job as far as I am concerned. I mean, we got guys that are taking players off the field if they lose their helmet. We got people reevaluating them, taking them to the locker room no matter what. We saw in the last couple of weeks, big players, big receivers that are getting concussed or sent in the back for concussions, missing key drives because of the protocol. So they definitely care. But what fans and people have to realize is it's a violent sport. I mean, these guys are running into each other at full speed. These are giant men. It's not, you know, your Pee Wee football. This isn't flag football. And I like the initiative to show that they care. And I think it stems down, you know, from with the social media and people being able to share so much. Nowadays, you can see someone, you know, get violently hurt in a Canadian football game, and that'll be, you know, in your email the next morning in a meme, and you see these violent hits, and you're just like, oh, my God. The reality is it's a big sport with a lot of people playing in a lot of different places, and there's going to be nasty injuries. That's just part of the game. So I love what they're doing, but is there really anything they can do aside from completely taking the pads off and making touch football? I don't know.
I'm wondering about this. Like I said, you're a guy that knows this game. You're a guy that watches this game every single week and covers it. Would you be in favor of or opposed to them taking a stance like college football with the targeting, and if they find that you are targeting, you are immediately ejected? Would that, I mean, it feels to me like the only way you're really going to get anybody's attention is to throw people out of the game. Like the fines, they don't really bother. The only thing you really get their attention is if you actually take them out of the game. Would you be for the targeting suspensions like that?
I'm going to tell you no, and I might be a little biased. Specifically, just so the viewer or the listeners out there get an idea, I'm 5'9", 135 pounds.
All right.
5'9", and 100 pounds in high school throughout my entire time playing college or high school football.
Sure.
So I was a little guy that was getting concussed all the time and breaking bones and getting a plate in my collarbone because I was taking nasty hits. So I understand it's a violent game. I knew that going in. I think parents should tell their kids that, and kids know that going in, that they're going to get roughed up a little bit. But I don't know if you saw in the UCLA-BYU game that happened recently.
Yeah, I did.
There was back-to-back plays where a safety targeted, got ejected. The backup safety targeted on the next play, got ejected. So there was 2 back-to-back plays with targeting safety ejections. And to me, having played football my whole life, watching it, my parents love it, the safety position, that's their job.
Right.
And I know it's a violent, but that's their job. Their job is to not let anybody catch the ball in the middle of the field. That's what separates good defense from bad defenses, because then offenses aren't calling those seam routes, and wide receivers are a little bit skittish to go in the middle. I hate to make a point about Demaryius Thomas, but you saw that in some big games where he goes across the middle and gets lit up. He's not going through that middle anymore. So I understand the safety reason, but that is the safety's job, to light them up.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, because I think it brings up a couple of points. I've heard a couple of people in the national media bring that up as maybe something that the NFL should be doing. Why are they so behind the college game in that respect? Here's my problem with it. One, the NFL doesn't have 100 players on their sideline like the college kids do. They've got 5-6 deep at every position at college, because you can keep 80, 90 guys on the roster. The NFL can't do that. You lose a safety, you're down to one other safety, and now you've got some problems. The other side of it is, are we really going to trust these same replay officials that I can't figure out what a catch is and what isn't to be ruling whether or not that was targeting or not. They can't even decide if it's a catch or not.
I agree. And that is going to affect the game tremendously. If you're talking about Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas getting taken out of a game, or TJ Ward, or HaHa Clinton Dix, one of these top safeties out of a game, that depletes the secondary.
See.
And if you have a player like Tom Brady, or when Peyton Manning played, or Aaron Rodgers, or Drew Brees, they're going to dice you up the second that safety's off the field. And then it's not even really a fair contest anymore.
Well, and the other side of it is, I've noticed we only care about certain positions. And let's be honest, it's the sexy positions. We care if a quarterback gets rung up. We care if a wide receiver gets rung up. Running backs, they might take some shots. And here's the other thing. Defensive players, we could care less if someone sticks their helmet in your ear hole. Too bad for you. We only care about certain players.
I absolutely agree. And that's part of the reason why defense is, to me, such a great aspect of the game, and why it's sad to see targeting being taken out, because these guys are the meanest guys. I've played with them. I have friends that are college linebackers. They can turn a switch and they become violent players that just go, 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 go. And so with all these quick players now in the league, and they catch the ball and they crunch right before they get hit, it's not a target. It's so hard for a player to be running full speed with the ball there and then change his target because the wide receiver dipped his shoulder, dipped his head, so he didn't get taken out. I think it's almost a detriment to the game, because players on offense, especially by the time they're in the NFL, they know how to contort their bodies in certain instances to not get the full brunt of the hit. So I agree with you, it is a sexy position. I mean, even the tight end position is still, I mean, you see Rob Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham get their legs taken out every week, and that's just part of the game. They're going to figure something out, and like that UCLA-BYU game, I thought it was pretty out of control. The entire coaching staff of BYU rushed the field both times the players got ejected, so it's definitely going to be something to be talked about.
Okay, we're going to do something a little bit different here. We are going to play a game. Yes, that's right. We're going to play a game as long as we've got Dylan here. We are, you know, now that we are in week two, and it's funny because we look at every single week in the NFL almost like we got another piece of the puzzle. And now we can look at, okay, now I saw this. Ooh, and I got another clue here. Oh, and I found another clue. Like, I feel like I'm Scooby-Doo and we're just looking for clues. We're starting to figure some things out about different teams. And as we start to put this puzzle together, hopefully by the end of the season, we're starting to say, okay, these are the teams to watch. We're going to play a game. The game is called Overreaction or Sounds About Right. I'm going to read a statement to Dylan. He's going to tell me if he feels like it's an overreaction or if he feels like the statement is actually true. Dylan, are you ready?
I'm ready to go. I'm going to be Nicolas Cage in National Treasure.
I love it. All right, here we go. First statement, overreaction or sounds about right. Brock Osweiler makes the Houston Texans a legitimate Super Bowl contender.
I'm going to say overreaction. Having watched him be on the bench for 4 years, watched all his home games that he played here last year from the stands, I don't think that he's going to be able to do what the Houston Texans did last year. Number one, Andrew Luck was hurt, and that whole division was a mess to begin with. He obviously didn't need a high record to win that division. Brock Osweiler, I believe they're up to a 2-0 start. They beat the Kansas City Chiefs. That was a good win. But you have J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney. You have some good, solid defenders, but I don't think Brock Osweiler is going to make his first playoff start this year.
Okay, and I could see that. I agree with you. I think it's just a little too early to anoint Brock just yet. I really like that Houston defense, but I want to see them play a little bit tougher defense than what they've gone against so far. Okay, next statement. Jimmy Garoppolo is dreamier than Tom Brady.
I think that could sound about right.
Okay.
Tom Brady's getting up there in age, and I don't know, I don't want to offend anybody out there, but I think Garoppolo did have a pretty good smile. I think he's got a contagious smile, pretty straight white teeth, and it only makes sense that the most dreamy quarterback in the NFL is backed up by another good-looking guy. So I'm going to go ahead and say sounds about right.
Do you think is this a franchise quarterback, or is Bill Belichick just making him look really, really good? I know he got dinged up this last week. He's got the shoulder injury, whatever. We'll never find out what's really going on there. Is he a franchise guy? I think teams are going to pay him like a franchise guy here in the next couple of years.
And what I was saying was, this is the Brock Osweiler effect, right? He's got no contract long term, and he's got about 4 games to show what he can do. We saw that Brock Osweiler was able to turn 5 games into a $72 million deal. Unfortunately for Jimmy, it ended short, but those 2 games, I mean, that was a strong performance.
It was impressive.
And then again, it's the Patriot way. they are next man up mentality. It's always been that way. So the backups are always mentally prepared to be a starter. They're never thrust in a position that they couldn't handle. So it sounds about right that he could be a franchise quarterback just because of his athleticism, but it's Bill Belichick. He's the GOAT. He's the best coach of all time. He's going to produce out of anything you do.
I just keep thinking Matt Castle. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this kid actually has it, but we have seen guys step in for Belichick, and Belichick makes them look really... Maybe the Patriots should go sign Tim Tebow for a couple weeks to back up Jacoby Brissett while Garoppolo's out for a while.
Hey, don't take Tim Tebow's baseball dreams away from him just yet.
Okay, here's our next statement. Overreaction or sounds about right? The Denver Broncos defense is dirty. We saw them pop Cam Newton, saw them hit Andrew Luck. The Denver defense is dirty. Is that an overreaction?
Sounds about right, and don't take it in a malicious sense. I had season tickets. I went to the two games. There were three hits on Cam Newton that were not flagged that I said seconds after, I was like, wow, I cannot believe they did not throw a flag, especially after the NFL, their $100 million pledge to head trauma.
Right.
You talk about the number one quarterback in the league taking nasty shots. I was just shocked that they didn't. They obviously reevaluated the next week and find some players.
Yes, they did.
But that's what happens when you are now running with the title, the number one defense. Do I think Seattle has been a nasty defense? No, but do they throw down some violent hits that makes you go, wow.
Sure.
This is back in the day football. We're talking 85 Bears over here. I agree. And now in this day and age when it's so pass happy and there's so many holes and you got the Saints and the Raiders throwing 35 points down. Yeah, when you see someone throw a safety right at a tight end like we saw Darian Stewart, and TJ Ward, yeah, you're going to think it's a little malicious. But I think it sounds about right. I think they are, you know, getting a little close to some of those plays. We know Keith Tlaib likes to make some silly plays here and there that gives him a bad name, and he's kind of our captain of our no-fly zone there. So I could see why they get that stipulation.
Right.
So I'm going to say it sounds about right.
Buffalo Bills head coach Rex Ryan had the lap band removed, said he wanted to kind of fit in a little better with his brother Rob. Rex Ryan removed the lap band because he's getting ready for an offseason of just gorging himself. True or false?
True. And when it comes to the Ryans, I try not to pay attention to them. I think they're all a bunch of air, a bunch of steam.
Sure.
And there's really no substance there. And I think Rob Ryan's defense has been a testament to that over the years, that he's kind of a lot of the talk, just like Rex, and really no walk.
Yeah, he's about to get fired, I do believe. Okay, next statement. Overreaction sounds about right. The San Francisco 49ers are not horrible.
Overreaction. The 49ers are not a good football team, and it's funny as I say it because my roommate is the biggest 49ers fan I know. Let's look at their last two games. They blew out the L.A. Rams in a great showing. But is Blaine Gabbert really going to win you eight games in the NFL, especially in that division with the Cardinals and the Seahawks? I don't think so. And you saw the Rams take down the Seahawks. Those division games are always so up in the air.
Yeah.
I don't think the 49ers have the depth on defense. Again, they have Navarro Bowman, they have good leaders, but Blaine Gabbert, I don't think, is an over 500 quarterback.
Okay, I like that. Next statement. The Cleveland Browns will not win a single game again, ever.
Sounds 100% correct.
Thank you. I thought that sounded right.
I feel so bad for Cleveland Browns fans. I really do. We're talking about one of four teams that have never even been in a Super Bowl, let alone win one. And I think it's just forever and always going to be a basketball town now, thanks to LeBron. I don't think they have, Josh McCown's down now. Who do they have? I mean, who's going to play quarterback? Are there any more quarterbacks? Is Mark Sanchez going to be a Brown now?
Not looking good. And I'm hearing that the McCown injury is way more serious than what they initially thought.
I mean, he had a really big blow up right there in the first quarter. Three touchdowns he led them to. So that's definitely a hit for a solid backup who has 13 seasons in the NFL.
Okay, next statement. The Miami Dolphins are going to lead the NFL in one important statistic. Almost winning. Overreaction or sounds about right?
Sounds about right. The Dolphins had a great comeback against the Patriots' third-string quarterback last week. Couldn't quite finish it off. Tannehill has these flashes every year. He'll play these games where he's got a great quarterback rating. He's making solid throws, solid decisions. We know he played wide receiver, so he's very athletic. And you see that guy, and you're like, wow, that guy could be a franchise quarterback. And yet he just cannot answer the bell. It's like almost like Andy Dalton Carson Palmer syndrome. And until Ryan Tannehill can find his way into a playoff game and win one, I think they're going to just be almost good.
Almost good. Yeah, that's my concern for them. And they've played two pretty good teams, pretty tough. They've just found ways to crumble down the stretch, and so much of it has been Ryan Tannehill. He's good in sections, and it seems like he looks better once the game's already decided.
Yeah, when the team switches to those zone defenses and Tannehill can start utilizing those legs, I think that's kind of the Tebow effect we have, where teams play solid D, confuses them, and then once they let up because they think they have a W, then I think he's able to get some balls in that he normally wouldn't be able to. So Dolphins, again, with the Patriots, they're never really going to have a chance.
Okay, after watching the Sunday night game, here's the statement. The Green Bay Packers still don't have enough talent around Aaron Rodgers.
I think that's a huge overreaction. I think the Packers are actually my Super Bowl favorite for the NFC.
Okay.
I think Aaron Rodgers with Jordy Nelson back, Randall Cobb. We can just get Eddie Lacy just to do more. And he just has to do more. I don't know what is going on with him, but he can snap out of it and be like he was his rookie year. I think the Packers are Super Bowl bound.
I worry because I feel like so much of their offense is kind of geared around, let's have Aaron Rodgers run around and run around and run around and try to make something happen. And the only true receiver that consistently gets separation from defenders is Jordy Nelson. And the other guys are out there like, hopefully, if Aaron runs around long enough, maybe possibly they'll get open.
And I absolutely agree with you. The reason I think it's the Packers here is you look at their last 2 years, Aaron Rodgers, they had a 16-0 lead in the playoffs against the Seahawks. Choked that unbelievably, but he still led the team down and tied it up, and then to lose it in overtime, never got to see the ball. Fast forward another year in Arizona, throws the Hail Mary, ties it up, goes to overtime, never get to see the ball. They win overtime. I think Aaron Rodgers and McCarthy are pissed. I think they're ready, and I think even though they might not have all the pieces that you would want in a Super Bowl team, I think they're going to force the issue and make something happen this year.
Okay. Next statement up for overreaction or sounds about right. Kansas City Chiefs fans have some reason for concern about their offense and Alex Smith.
I think Alex Smith is just like a Tannehill. I think that's an overreaction. We saw what they did last year, down 1-5, 1-10 in a row. Granted, they did have the easiest schedule probably in the history of NFL during that stretch. However, Alex Smith is a fundamentally great game-managing franchise quarterback. I am a diehard Broncos fan. I hate the Chiefs, but I think Alex Smith is a phenomenal talent. I think Jeremy Maclin and Andy Reid are a great combo in the passing game. Their backup running backs are doing great for Jamal Charles. We all know that their defense is a stout defense, so I think they'll be a wild card, if not win a division over the Broncos, but I think both those teams will be in the playoffs to represent the AFC West.
Would you just trade Jamal Charles at this point if you're them? You found replacements.
You clearly have found replacements. It's pretty obvious that Wes and those guys can get it done. I mean, they're making plays every week, it seems like. And again, Jamal Charles, he has the NFL record for most yards per carry. So he's not a slouch. You obviously got to give him a go. But let's say Jamal Charles has an epic year this year. I don't think you sign him to a big deal because you have other players that can produce pretty much what he can. You can use that salary cap money for something else.
Sure. All right, next statement here on overreaction or sounds about right. The Seattle Seahawks offense couldn't score on a drunk Kardashian.
I think that sounds about right.
Does it?
And I hate to say that because you saw what the Seahawks did last year in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, they start get going, don't they?
Or out of control with Doug Baldwin. But what happened out there, Clint? How do they have these consistent, low-scoring field goal games with the Rams and division opponents? It's kind of head-scratching.
Here's the thing that I wonder about them. Well, there's two, I guess it's kind of two-sided. One, hurt Jimmy Graham as soon as possible because we all saw how much better you got without him. Two, I don't know that offensive line has ever truly recovered from that deal. And I think that offensive line, it seems like as the year gets going, they'll start to get a little bit better. But right now, they're really struggling. Russell Wilson is starting to take, I don't want to say huge hits, but he's just starting to get worn down. He's starting to get beat up and get hit more and more often.
Yeah, he's out there running for his life.
Yeah, he is.
Hopefully, who's he being? Celine Dion? She can
something like that.
Him. So I think he's good on the home side. But yeah, the offensive line, I mean, talk about a bad GM move to get Jimmy Graham and get rid of your all-pro center. He's out there running for his life, and Jimmy, you can't get the ball to Jimmy Graham if Russell Wilson's running circles around the ends every play.
Right, and we know that Graham's not going to block, and if he's in the game, then you know, you kind of know what the Seattle Seahawks offense is going to be doing. They're going to be throwing if he's in the game. So, yeah, it just hasn't been a good fit, and their offensive line is struggling. They just can't put up points. I mean, held to, what, 3 points by the Rams?
That's shocking for a team that didn't score a single point in the opener on Monday night. So, yeah, that's shocking.
Crazy. All right. We have two more statements to go. Almost done here. First statement, the Oakland Raiders defense is going to keep them from making the playoffs. Is that an overreaction, or does that sound about right?
That sounds about 100% correct, Clint. I'm glad you brought that up. We all know the Raiders have an explosive offense, and we all know everybody seems to love and jump on the chance as soon as Derek Carr's name is mentioned, how great this guy is. As soon as Derek Carr's name comes up, everyone just wants to talk about, oh, he's great this, he's great that. And I absolutely agree, but just like we saw in 06 when Jay Cutler was the same kind of talks about quarterback and let the number two offense, Brandon Marshall, Tony Shepard, Peyton Hillis, doesn't do you anything if you don't have a defense. And for someone who saw 2 years ago Peyton Manning in the number one defense get destroyed in the playoffs and then to come back 2 years later with the worst offense and the best defense, it's 100% fact that you cannot win this league without a defense that can at least hold a team below 24 points on average week in and week out.
Right. And I'll give them a little bit of a caveat here. The Raiders have played the Saints now and the Falcons. Both are capable of at least putting up some stats. But they've given up 1,035 yards in two games. That is the most in like 65 years through the first two games. Final statement here, right on our overreaction or sounds about right. Indianapolis Colts Andrew Luck's kidneys hide under the bed on game day. What do you think?
Ding, ding, ding. I think that's the jackpot. You talk about $140 million man ruining my fantasy team year in and year out. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe get some kidney transplants. I don't know what's going on over there.
They don't have any help around him. I don't understand it. You have, like you said, you've got the $140 million quarterback. And name a guy on the offense besides T.Y. Hilton. Like, there's nobody else there.
And they decided that Andrew Luck was the franchise and he's taking all the money and can't win like that. Like we said, his kidneys need some of that money. I hope he has a good insurance plan.
Yeah, not good. I was waiting for the, you know, on the game on Sunday and Denver, they hit him. They got to him. I don't know that they ever really truly decked him. I've seen him take just some huge shots this year already. And we're only two games in, but he doesn't have much help. The offensive line is kind of patched together. Frank Gore, hard nose, tough guy. I like him, but I don't know that he's really an every down back and a guy that you can just say, hey, if all else fails, just hand the ball to Frank Gore. I mean, what is he, 37? You just can't do it anymore. Andrew Luck, I feel like he might be wasting some of his best seasons with no talent around him.
Yeah, the same thing we're seeing in Seattle. There's no offensive line, and you're just basically taking these quarterbacks that are Super Bowl caliber quarterbacks and getting them injured for no reason because you can't help them out. I mean, at this point, you got to get those quick passes that Peyton Manning made so famous, just those quick out screens and try to get the ball out of Andrew Luck's hands. We know he's big and fast and athletic, but clearly his body's taking too many shots.
Yeah, I would agree with you. While we have you here, you know, we've obviously done our NFL preview and that kind of thing, but while we have you here, we wanted to actually stop and say, okay, let's have you lay out a couple of awards for us as we're going forward, maybe some guys to look for. Who do you think could win a few of these awards by the end of the season? I know we're asking you to look pretty deep into your crystal ball, but I want you to take a look. If you had to pick one offensive player to be the offensive player of the year right now, I know we're only 2 weeks in, who would be your offensive player of the year by the end of the season?
Well, Clint, I was hoping it was going to be Jameis Winston. After seeing his amazing FSU halftime speech and rallied those guys to a big win their first week of college football, and having them go up for four touchdowns week one, I thought that Jameis Winston was going to pull Cam Newton and kind of have that kind of year. Obviously, we saw last week that was not the case with four interceptions and a fumble loss. So I think I'm going to stick with my preseason MVP. I already mentioned it once. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be your MVP. Like I said, he just had two insane, salty ends to his last two seasons in the playoffs where he performed and his defense didn't. And I think this is the year that he's really going to shine now that he's got Jordy Nelson back. I think they can go as deep as they were with Jordy Nelson. They could probably get to that NFC Championship game.
Okay. Going Aaron Rodgers with the Green Bay Packers. I am going to go Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger. I think he has so many weapons. My only concern is I know Big Ben gets hurt eventually. It's just a matter of when. He always ends up getting hurt. If you had to pick a defensive player of the year, who would your pick be for defensive player of the year right now?
You're going to hate this. Pretty bland and obvious pick from my side. I think it's got to be Von Miller. Three sacks last week. He had one week before, so we're talking about two sacks a game. Already has a forced fumble. He's in about every commercial known to man. I was watching a YouTube video that had nothing to do with sports, and he still made a cameo in my YouTube commercial.
Sure.
I think it's just too obvious that this guy is balling. DeMarcus Ware is now out for probably 6 weeks, just like last year. So now even more is put onto his shoulders. I think he's going to be wanting to produce even more. So I think Von Miller's got to be that defense player of the year.
You know, I'm watching Von on Sunday, and he can just beat you however you want to be beaten. I mean, I saw him pick up the Colts offensive tackle and just bulldoze him straight into Andrew Luck. You see him beat him on the edge. You see him beat him and spin inside. He just has so many. He's so much stronger, I think, than he ever gets credit for. We always think of him as a speed, as an edge guy. He can run right up the gut and plow right through you and throw you into the quarterback, too.
Yeah, he's sneaky. He's one of those sneaky, quick guys. And even when if you didn't know who Von Miller was coming out of Texas A&M when he drafted, you saw this quirky guy with his shades that didn't have any lenses in him. And you just were like, kind of scratching your head, like, this guy's going to be the sack king of the NFL.
Right.
I think he's made a living off of the fact that people just underestimate his size and ability, and that someone, like I said, who is short and skinny his whole life, I respect that.
I like that. I am going to go, of course, with the pick of Houston Texans defensive end J.J. Watt, just because I think that he'll impress voters with his ability to wear a medium t-shirt. Rookie of the year. If you had to go with a rookie of the year right now, and you got 2 weeks to kind of base this off of, but when you're looking around at the league, who do you think the rookie of the year could end up being?
So I know who it's not going to be. I know it's not going to be Joey Bosa.
No, Joey Bosa won't be it.
He held out of training camp and got paid all that money to be injured and not play for the Chargers. That helps us out in the AFC West.
Sure.
I don't think it's going to be Jared Goff.
Nope.
The fact that he's not playing right now with Case Keenum playing as bad as he is shocking, and I just didn't see enough of him from preseason. So based on what I've seen and what history tells me, I think Dak Prescott is going to be a rookie of the year.
Okay.
Every single level that he's become quarterback, he was thrust into the role because the starting quarterback got injured.
Yeah.
What happens? Tony Romo gets hurt, and Dak Prescott has never given the starting job back when that happened. I think Tony Romo's too fragile. I think Dak Prescott's too much fun for Jerry Jones. See him go. I think he's going to be the rookie of the year.
I wish so bad that Jason Garrett would figure out how to just run the ball and run the ball and run the ball and run the ball instead of trying to throw it all over the place. You've got a great offensive line. Ezekiel Elliott looks like a stud at running back. Let this kid hand off and do some play action stuff, and he's going to kill you if you do it. But I always feel like Jason Garrett has to prove to everyone how smart he is and how his passing system is so incredible, and he's going to end up outthinking himself down in Dallas. I'm going to go with Will Fuller, wide receiver down with the Houston Texans. Not a huge Houston Texans guy, but man, he has put it up back-to-back 100-yard game so far receiving. I don't know if that can keep up with Brock Osweiler, but I like what I've seen from Will Fuller. If you had to go with the bust of the year, you mentioned a couple just a minute ago with Joey Bosa and Jared Goff. Who would you go with bust of the year?
Bust of the year, right now, I'm looking kind of at Todd Gurley. Not because I think he's going to have a bad season at all, but just because of the hype that was surrounded around him.
Okay.
He was supposed to be this new Adrian Peterson, just unstoppable force. I know a lot of people took him first overall in their fantasy league. If you don't have Will Fuller, by the way, you basically get him quick because he's a great wide receiver, like you mentioned. But I don't think he's going to produce the kind of numbers that everyone was really predicting for him. I think that's going to go to David Johnson. But I think just based on the high expectations of Todd Gurley, I don't think he's going to meet them.
Could we put, you know, Jared Goff on the list? Could we put Jeff Fisher on? Could we just put the entire Rams franchise on bust of the year?
How is Jeff Fisher 25 years into coaching, and just still has the kind of track record that he has, both with the players that speak of him as a past coach, as well as what we saw in Hard Knocks? I was not impressed.
I wasn't either. It was one of the first times I came out of Hard Knocks going, I have absolutely no faith in this team whatsoever. They're going to be way worse than I even thought they'd be.
Yeah, and we all know that there's a lot of that the cameras don't show, but what they showed of Jeff Fisher's coaching strategy kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I didn't think that's kind of the way that most coaches have had a winning formula in the NFL. I was walked away from that with a nasty feeling in my stomach about the Rams.
I did too. And you mentioned, you know, he's been coaching in the NFL for 25 years. I think he's made the playoffs six times. How does he keep getting these jobs? I don't know how that works.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir.
Who's the most surprising team to you so far, 2 weeks in?
Most surprising team to me has got to be the Chargers. I mean, I hate to keep it in the AFC West. I also am surprised by the Titans. I thought they'd be 2-0 by now.
Yeah.
That big comeback win against the Lions. Granted, it is the Lions. But, I mean, I'm so excited to see what Phillip Rivers does here because Keenan Allen, gone. Danny Woodhead, gone. Antonio Gates is 80 years old.
Yes.
Can't rely on him. So who is he throwing to, and what's going on over there? Their number one draft pick from this year, Joey Bosa, can't even get on the field. And yet, Phillip Rivers is swinging the ball around like a crazy person.
Yeah.
So I really want to see what he's doing. He's really surprised me, especially with the players he's lost in the first 2 weeks.
You know who I've been surprised by, and it's going to make me physically sick to say this, but I'm a little bit shocked by the New England Patriots. They've come out, played really well with backup quarterbacks. And not that I'm shocked that they played so well, but that they played that well with backup quarterbacks. I mean, they're dominating people for 3 and 4 quarters at times, blowing people out. I did not expect them to go down to Arizona and put a whooping on the Cardinals like they did. And through 3.5 quarters against Miami, they were doing the same thing. It surprised me a little bit. Who's the most disappointing team so far?
Disappointing team? Where could you really think of a team that you thought had high expectations? I think that has to go to maybe Buffalo.
Yeah.
They came in with decent high expectations. That's obviously a lot to do with the coaching staff in the Ryan. But they had talent. Tyrod Taylor's the second year now. Sammy Watkins, we know that he's a big receiver. LeSean McCoy, we know that he's a shifty back. And we know that their defense has been stout for the last 4 years, always with the Williams in the center. So I think that's got to be my biggest bust. I for sure thought they could have taken the Jets on Thursday night, and that just wasn't the case. And now you saw that they fired their offensive coordinator after that game. So they definitely got to be the team that's confusing me right now with what they're trying to do.
You know, the team that people were really starting to talk about going into the season was the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm starting to hear so much hype about, well, they're really starting to get some talent, and Blake Bortles is really coming into his own. I know it exists, but I've never actually seen a great Blake Bortles play. I know they have to exist because people talk about him all the time, but whenever I watch him, I just see him go out there, go 3 and out, throw a few interceptions, fumble it a couple times. Like, I keep hearing rumors about it, but Jacksonville, really disappointing, and boring to watch, not even fun to watch. Jacksonville is a big disappointment for me this year.
Yeah, and Clint, I think where you're hearing that is probably from my generation, the millennials over here that are playing a ton of draft teams all the time.
Maybe that's what it is, because he puts up stats late.
Has been great fantasy output for low cost of dollars on drafting.
Yes.
So there is a lot of lineups that a lot of people are fond of, so I think the fantasy numbers are getting people a little skewed as far as how good the Jacksonville Jaguars really are.
Excellent point, and I think you're exactly right on that. Okay, you mentioned the Green Bay Packers. You like them on the NFC side. What's your Super Bowl prediction? Who comes out on the AFC side, and who's going to win the thing this year in Super Bowl 51?
Oh, come on. It's got to be another Broncos repeat Super Bowl, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I'm fine with that. I'm getting a little worried. I had Seahawks over Patriots in my Super Bowl prediction at the beginning of the year. I'm starting to get a little concerned that Russell Wilson's not going to be there. And who knows what's going to happen with the Patriots by the time it's all said and done. So you're going to go Broncos over Packers in the Super Bowl.
Yep, just like back in the day.
I love it.
The John Elway duo of Brett Favre.
I love it. All right, well, we have a little more immediate picks right away. And I'm going to be honest, doesn't look like a great NFL week this coming week, at least on paper. But we know there's been a few games that have kind of snuck up on us already. So I'm just going to throw out some of the games that look really, really interesting to me. And I want you to give me your pick on them. Thursday night, we actually get a pretty interesting game. I don't know how this one's going to go. Houston Texans go to the New England Patriots, now on their third quarterback. And who knows who it'll be by the time we get down to it. They're going to be down to Jacoby Brissett. There's talk that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to maybe be the backup. If you're okay to be the backup, aren't you okay to play?
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. Maybe he's just a decoy for some Edelman trick plays that come in as the backup quarterback there. But I hate to give Brock Osweiler props just because of what he did to us down here in Denver with the 4 years behind Manning and kind of leaving us there. But I think the Texans are going to win. I didn't see anything out of Jacoby positive at all.
Yeah.
He came into the game. I think they just faltered almost like a Tim Tebow run offense would, just not moving the chains and kind of looking confused out there. So I think by default of the Patriots offensive quarterback right now, I should say, I think the Texans will take that.
Yeah, I'll go Texans on that as well. I just like their defense too much, and I think anything their offense can get will kind of be bonus. The New York Jets are going to go to Kansas City. Two teams that we've kind of seen a little bit of good and a little bit of bad on both sides. Who do you like Jets going into Arrowhead?
Yeah, I hate to say something's a must win this early in the year, but we're talking about 2-1-1 teams that are definitely going to be there in the end in week 17 and week 16 in the discussion for wild card, if not winning the division. So big game, I say, as far as potential down the road, but I got to give it to the Chiefs. I think their defense is a little bit better. I think Fitzmagic is still trying to get over that not contract extension, maybe throwing the ball a little bit too much, a little bit too freely. And with the Chiefs coming off a loss, I think they're going to rebound back and go 2-1.
Like the Chiefs at home, yeah, I like them. I like them playing at Arrowhead as well. Defense is going to be pretty tough. Fitzpatrick has a genuine advantage in throwing to some wide receivers that really go and attack the football. They make him look a lot better, I think, than he is half the time. Last game I'm going to throw out there, of course, it's the home game, but it is a big, big-time game. The Denver Broncos go to Cincinnati to face the Bengals. We saw these two meet late last season. It was a hard-fought battle. We thought we'd see them again in the playoffs. Didn't end up going that way. Saw Pittsburgh instead. But who do you like Denver going to Cincinnati this week?
All I have to say is A.J. Green. Could we get like a quadruple coverage on that man?
Yep.
I think we'll be okay. If we can maybe get some 13 guys on some defenses not called here, I think we might have a chance. It's at Cincinnati again, another game that's going to have playoff implications. We saw the Broncos win last year with a backup quarterback and Brock Osweiler. Granted, that was at home. But I think we can cover A.J. Green with a keep to you with some safety help. I think the pass rush is going to be too much for Andy Dalton. I think quarterbacks are now kind of having nightmares having to play against Von Miller just because he's been so consistent against two great quarterbacks already. So I think that's going to be another Broncos W. I know I'm riding the Bronco train hard, Clint, but that's just what my crystal ball tells me.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do. You know, you got to go with what your gut tells you. I am actually going to go with the Bengals squeaking out a close one at home, but I will be happy to be wrong on that. Dylan Brooks, have to say thank you for stopping by the Daily Dose again. You know you are always welcome. We got a lot of NFL to get to, got a lot of things coming here in the upcoming season, and of course we have NBA to get to as well. You know we're going to have you back for that. So thanks for stopping by the Dose. You know you're always welcome here. We appreciate it.
Hey, Clint, thank you. And like I said, the time of season we're in right now, hide your kids, hide your wife, buy 3 more TVs because we got a lot of sports to watch.
We have also got a lot of sports still to talk here on the Daily Dose, so don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Dear podcast listener, we accept the fact that we have to sacrifice not only our Wednesdays, but our Fridays as well to entertain you. But we think you are crazy to make us do a promo telling you who we think we are. When you listen to our podcast, you think you know who we are, in the simplest terms, in the most convenient definitions. But what we found out is that each one of us is a dork.
I had the basket case, and I'm a princess.
And I'm a pothead.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Prime Podcast. Find out more at theprimepod.com. Think of the tender
things that we were working on. Do you like beer?
Beer.
Do you like rock and roll?
I'm allergic to penicillin.
Do you like drunk Australians?
Beer.
Do you like interviews with bands exploring facets of entertainers' lives best left to the imagination and possibly not presented on a radio show?
I don't know where this is going.
Jump on rogueintel.com/remedial.
What are you doing listening to Rogue Intel? That podcast is for Slytherin.
You know, like I said earlier, Major League Baseball starting to get interesting now. Got a few storylines that we have to keep in mind when we're talking about Major League Baseball as we get into this postseason stretch. Of course, the Chicago Cubs have already clinched their division. Are we actually going to see the Chicago Cubs do it this year? I mean, if not now, when? This has to be the season for the Chicago Cubs, doesn't it? They are sitting there nearing 100 wins, far, far, far ahead of everyone else, loaded. They've got it all. They've got pitching. They've got closing. They've got the bats. Chicago Cubs should be right there. You know, one team that is still at least in the hunt, I suppose, the New York Mets. Just took a big hit, losing to Grom for the rest of the year. But, you know, the New York Mets actually put Tim Tebow's number 15 jersey on sale on the Mets online site. Of course, Tim Tebow, former quarterback of the NFL, was with, let's see, the Broncos, the Jets, the Patriots, the Eagles, Heisman-winning quarterback down at Florida. Very popular, unpopular, depending on what crowd you're hanging with. But the New York Mets have put Tim Tebow's number 15 jersey on sale. And, you know, it shot to the third highest seller, only behind David Ortiz and Chris Bryant. Now, some of that is, and I know Tim Tebow is very polarizing. You love the kid, you hate the kid. There is rarely any in between. But Tim Tebow's jersey went straight to third highest seller. Now, some of that, honestly, is the fact, I think, that people are hoping it's a collector's item. Tim Tebow played baseball? I don't remember that. When did he do that? And so I think there is a little bit of that collector's item. Grab this. It might be rare. I don't know how rare it's going to be if it's already gone straight to third place. But grab that. But here's some of the other part of it. I think Tim Tebow is more exciting than much else in baseball. I think that's some of it. I think there aren't a ton of personalities in baseball. Don't have a lot of guys out there making huge names for themselves. Not like you do in the NFL or in the NBA. It's a little bit different deal. Tim Tebow is more exciting than anything else in baseball, so of course his jersey shot right to the top of the charts. Now, you know the regular season is finishing up. Just got a little bit of time left. And as happy as that makes me, there actually is one reason that we should be sad about the regular season finishing up. Long time Los Angeles Dodgers announcer Vin Scully will retire on October 2nd. He is going to do that prior to the postseason. And you know, just last week, we spoke about some of my favorite NFL announcers, went through and counted down some of the favorite announcers that I've had watching NFL games. Make no mistake, Vin Scully is the finest, the most listened to baseball broadcaster that has ever lived. In his incredible career, Vin Scully called around 9,000 games. He announced 20 no-hitters, 3 perfect games, and 12 all-star games. You know, the thing about Scully that made him so great, he had that distinctive voice, of course, but he was an amazing storyteller. And he had an ability to bring a sense of drama when it was needed, but he did it without overspeaking. He did it without dominating the moment. He never shouted. He never screamed. He never yelled. He never did any of that. And somehow, he still absolutely captured all of the excitement that was going on within the game. It was his ability to listen to the game and his ability to allow you to hear the game and let the game speak for itself. Now, I understand it is a little different broadcasting radio to TV. He did both flawlessly. He knew that on the radio, you've got to paint more of a picture. On television, you've got to kind of let things paint themselves. Just be there to fill in some gaps. Just be there to fill in some quiet moments. Other than that, the fan can see it for themselves. But Vin Scully, he will be missed. If there is one downside to this baseball season winding down, it is that Vin Scully will be gone and he's going to give it up and retire. What a phenomenal career that he had. Okay, I know that we're just 3 weeks in college football. I know that we've barely scratched the surface, and everything we think we know right now, we don't know. And everything that we kind of think we have figured out, I'm sure it's going to twist around a little bit. But I'm telling you right now, there's already a few college football teams that are done. I don't mean kind of done. I mean done. They have no chance of getting into any kind of a playoff. They have no chance of winning any kind of a championship. Let's go through and count down a few of these college football teams that are already done just 3 weeks in. We're not even a month into the season. And I'm not talking, yes, I know some of the teams that are way back behind, you know, Kansas. Yeah, we know Kansas is done, you know. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about teams that were ranked really, really high. Here's one team. How about Ole Miss? The Ole Miss Rebels allowed another 21-point comeback. They did it once to Florida State, then they did it again this last week to Alabama. Now, I watched some of that game, and Ole Miss jumps out to this quick lead late in the second quarter. They're up 24-3. Alabama just put together a 50-yard drive, three plays. They go down and they get it. Okay, it's 24-10. You're right back in it. And then just before halftime, they get an 85-yard punt return from returner Eddie Jackson. And now you're only down a touchdown. Now, here's the thing. We all think of Nick Saban, big jerk. He's got, I don't know, a deal with the devil. Whatever you want to think about Nick Saban. You've gone out and you've played a pretty poor first half of football. Nick Saban took his young Alabama group in. You're down by a touchdown. Obviously, could have went in and just ripped them in the locker room. Here's one thing to keep in mind in coaching. And this is a lesson young coaches have to learn. Sometimes players have to learn. If you're a fan of the game, it's something you should keep in mind. You have to learn as a coach that you have to give your team what they need, not what they want. That might sound obvious. Of course, we give them what they need, not what they want. Well, it's not always that easy. I am absolutely positive Nick Saban wanted to walk in that locker room, only down a touchdown, and scream at his young team and say, "What in the world are you doing that we were down 24-3 at one point? What on earth were you doing?" That's not what he did. That's not what he did. Nick Saban went in and he cleared off a table. He got up on the table and he encouraged his team, "You haven't played the best half of football and you're only down a touchdown? This game's yours. Just go take it. I commend you on the job of already coming back just with 2 minutes left in the first half. You've already taken a huge step to coming back in this game." See, Nick Saban didn't panic, didn't go crazy, didn't let his emotion get the best of him, as so many coaches do. He gave his team what they needed. Now, sometimes what your team needs and what they want are two different things. Sometimes they go hand in hand. Sometimes they're not, though. Ole Miss is done already. Ole Miss can't possibly come back and get into any. Already lost two, and if, let's be honest, if you've lost two, you've got problems. Already lost two, and already given up two 21-point leads. One thing to think about the rest of the year, no game is safe if you're playing Ole Miss. If they go out this next week and they get up on Georgia by 21, 24 early, and I fully expect them to, you think that game's over? Don't turn your TV off. Not with the Ole Miss Rebels. Comeback might be coming. Southern Cal is done. USC is done. Just 3 weeks in. New head coach Clay Helton has been very unimpressive. Of course, Clay Helton took over for Steve Sarkisian after Sarkisian did whatever, went on a bender or rehab or whatever it was that he did. They said, "Hey, Clay Helton's a USC guy. Let's give it to Clay Helton." It's not working. It's not working. You know, the things that we're seeing, we keep hearing about all the talent, but we're not seeing any of the talent on Saturdays. We're not seeing the talent take over. And USC has Utah this weekend. You can't tell me they don't have as much talent as Utah. So what's the difference? Motivation? Coaching? Something. Something's going on. But the problem with Southern Cal, it never changes. They always say, "We've got to go get a Trojan guy. We've got to go get a USC guy." Forget hiring Trojan guys. Go get a good coach. You know, Nick Saban isn't an Alabama guy. Mark D'Antonio isn't a Michigan State guy. Go get a good coach. These colleges that get that stuck in their mind. "We've got to go get a Michigan guy. We've got to go get a USC guy." No, you don't. Go hire a good coach that can get the job done. I don't care where you're from. I don't care what school you went to. I just want to know if you can coach. And you know, one key difference between a guy like Clay Helton at USC, when we keep seeing Southern Cal taking these stupid penalties again and again and again, pushing a ref, getting into fights, that's the Trojan way. Remember what I said about Nick Saban giving his team what they need? Do you think Clay Helton is giving his team what they need? Some of those guys need to be thrown out of the program. Some of those guys need to be sitting down for a while. You need to stop patting these guys on the back and saying, "Hey, come on, it's just the Trojan way. That's okay." No, it's not. That's not the Trojan way. That's the dumb way. Remember, pat on the back and a kick in the butt are only about 6 to 8 inches apart. Sometimes you got to do the latter. Oklahoma is done. You know, there's some grumbling right now in Norman about big game Bob Stoops. Hey, I get it. I get it. If I were Bob Stoops, I would come out publicly and say, hey, can we drop the big game nickname officially from my name? Because the next big game he wins, whew, it's been a while. It has been a while. Here's the only thing that I caution Sooner fans about. We saw Oklahoma just get dominated by Ohio State. And Ohio State, this is a down year? After all the talent they lost to the NFL, this is a down year? Wow. What a job Urban Meyer has done at Ohio State. They're supposed to be down. They went into Norman and absolutely dominated the Sooners from start to finish. That wasn't even close. That wasn't even competitive. But here's the one thing I would caution Sooner fans. Be careful that you don't run Bob Stoops out of town too much. You're still, you know, ranked. You're still competitive. You were just in a playoff last year. Don't forget what teams like Texas have gone through to get where they are now. They went through some lean years before they got back. And they're not fully back quite yet. Things could be worse is what I'm saying. I live in Colorado. Trust me on this. Things could be worse. I remember grumbling back when Bill McCartney was at Colorado, when he was at Boulder. I don't know about Bill McCartney. I don't know if he's quite a big game coach. I remember grumbling about Rick Neuheisel. He's only getting us to the Holiday Bowl. Do you have any idea how desperate Colorado fans are to get back to the Holiday Bowl? They would kill to get to any bowl right now. Be careful, Oklahoma. If you want to have Bob Stoops go up and publicly announce big game is dropped off his name, I'm fine with that. But be careful. Notre Dame is done. Two losses already. Lost to Texas. Lost to Michigan State. And let's be real clear. That Michigan State loss wasn't particularly close. Michigan State dominated them up front, and they have exposed Notre Dame's defense. Not a very good defense. Brian Kelly has some work to do there. Notre Dame is already done. The Big 12 is done. Can we go ahead and just start to sprinkle some dirt on the Big 12 for the season? Hey, and if you didn't see it, the Big 12 refs are not helping their conference one bit. Big 12 refs absolutely screwed Texas on Saturday against California when late in the game, a Cal player drops the ball before crossing the goal line for a touchdown, and then a Texas player walks over and he picks up the ball. Now, he doesn't know it's a live ball, but he walks over and he picks it up. We all saw it. Everybody saw it. So the Big 12 refs reviewed the play, and they said, okay, no touchdown. He clearly dropped the ball before he went into the end zone. But no one recovered the ball, so it's Cal's ball at the one. We all saw him recover the ball. We all saw the same replay. He picked it up. Now, who are you going to believe? Big 12 officials or your own lying eyes? Big 12, you have not done yourself any favors this year. You killed Oklahoma State against Central Michigan, and then you killed Texas again on Saturday. I don't know if Texas comes back and wins, but you didn't even give them a chance. This was a shootout game. Who's to say Texas wouldn't have gone down the field and scored? Big 12 refs not doing a great job. Our last team that we can go ahead and put some dirt on, I know it's just one loss. I know it's just one. Florida State. The Seminoles are done. Yes, I know, Seminole fan. It's just one loss, except for one thing. No, it's not. Florida State got beat 63-20 by Louisville on Saturday. And as odd as this sounds, 63-20, it wasn't that close. It wasn't as close as that score might indicate. Like, you hear 63-20, you're like, no, that's a blow. No. It was way, way, way worse than that. 63-20. Louisville, that is a fast team. That is a fast team on both sides of the ball. Lamar Jackson putting up touchdowns like most people put up first downs. Louisville, team to watch coming down the stretch. They've got Clemson in 2 weeks for who represents that side of the ACC. Louisville, really fun team to watch. So much speed. So quick. Florida State was number two in the country, allowed the most points ever in Florida State history. I think Louisville's still down there running up and down that field. We still have a ton of great college football to come, but there's about five teams right there that are already done. You can spin it however you want. They're done. They're not going to be in the big thing. Okay, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5, and our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to kind of touch on that exact thing. We go into the college football season, and we look and we say, here's a team that should probably be up high. Here's a team, no, you're not there. You should be ranked high. You shouldn't be ranked high. And what are we decided on? I mean, what are we honestly choosing our rankings on? When they come out with the polls, what are the polls based on? Well, they're basically based on a little bit of what you did last year. I don't know why, because the roster's completely changed. Unless you return 22 out of 22, I don't know what last year honestly has to do with much. So we try to guess. We try to say, well, this team has good freshmen here, and he was backing him up, and this quarterback, well, he should be a little bit better, I don't know. And so we kind of guess. But every single year, we know there are teams that should be ranked higher and probably should be ranked lower. And let's be real honest. As much as we include what happened last year and maybe a little bit of what their roster looks like, what do we really rank most teams on? Their name. They get ranked by their name. They get ranked by their coach. They get ranked by their history. I mean, certain coaches are going to command a higher ranking than other coaches. I mean, look at Oklahoma and Houston this year. Are you going to give a higher ranking to Oklahoma and Bob Stoops? Or are you going to give a higher ranking to Tom Herman and Houston? Well, I mean, of course, it's Oklahoma. Look at the history that Oklahoma has. Look at what Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops has national championships. Who's going to take Tom Herman? Yeah, except for that Houston looks like they're quite a bit better than Oklahoma this year. See, every single season, we overrank and we overrate these teams. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is the five most overrated college football teams since 1989. Couldn't go back before 1989. Didn't want to dig through all those records. Didn't want to go through the museum of records there. But we can go back and we can look since 1989 which teams are consistently overranked. And what they did was they said, okay, here's where you were ranked to start the season. Here's how many spots you fell by the end of the season. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5, the most overrated college football teams. Number 5, we just talked about them. This team is consistently ranked a little too high. They dropped 85 spots since 1989. 85 spots. They are a minus 85 in rankings. The Florida State Seminoles. And you think back to Florida State and you say, yeah, but they had those really, really good teams in the late 90s. Of course, the early 90s, they were phenomenal. Late 80s, they were getting good. But if you think to those mid-2000s, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, remember those Wyatt Sexton, Drew Weatherford, Xavier Lee squads? Yeah, always ranked high, rarely ever delivered. Florida State comes in at number 5. Now, here's the thing. This isn't any bias by me. I didn't make up these numbers. I'm just telling you the numbers. This isn't my choice. This isn't my favorite of the teams that I want to hammer. I'm just telling you statistically which teams are consistently the most overrated. Number 4 on our list. Yeah, I mean, I know they're getting some high rankings this year, and to be honest, they haven't been tested quite yet. But the Michigan Wolverines are consistently pretty overrated. They are a minus 93. But they're Michigan. Yeah, and they're getting back on track now under Jim Harbaugh. But do you remember the Devin Gardner and Stephen Three years? Yeah, we kind of conveniently forgot those years, didn't we? Michigan always gets that high ranking. They're Michigan. They got the helmets. They got the tradition. They got Jim Harbaugh. A lot of times they don't live up to the billing. Number 3 on our list, the Texas Longhorns. Minus 94. You know, it looks like Charlie Strong has the Longhorns heading in the right direction now. But there have been some lean years in Austin. Remember Jared Hurd? Don't leave out Garrett Gilbert in 2010. And you know, we all remember the huge play that quarterback James Brown made when he beat Nebraska. But James Brown was just 4-7 in 1997. Remember Shea Morenz in the early 90s? Yeah, Texas sometimes fails to deliver on those high rankings. Number 2 on our list, and we just talked about them too. Kind of interesting how some of the most overrated college football teams since 1989 are already proving to be a little bit overrated this year. Number 2 on our list, at a minus 104. They've dropped 104 spots. Hey, high expectations tripped them up again this year. And it isn't the first time, because Oklahoma has stumbled in the past. Remember the teams they had with Steve Collins? Yeah, you remember Cale Gundy, don't you, Travis? Eric Moore, and yes, even Josh Heupel had to endure some seasons where Oklahoma could not live up to all the hype. Oklahoma, number 2 most overrated football program. So who could it be at number 1? I mean, who could it be that consistently gets a rating, a ranking higher than what they deserve? You know, it was all good in the mid-90s. It was all good in the mid-90s. They were rolling. It was a machine. It was a big red machine. But more often, the Cornhuskers of Nebraska were ranked way higher than they should have been. And when you think back and you remember some of those teams, Jamal Lord, remember how we were told Jamal Lord, oh man, he's going to be the next Tommy Frazier. Joe Daly, yeah, not the Daily Dose, Joe Daly, but Joe Daly in 2004, Zach Taylor in 2006. Remember Joe Gant in 2008? And yes, if we go clear back to 1990, Nebraska was the preseason number one under Mickey Joseph. Remember quarterback Mickey Joseph? Oh, he's going to be the next Turner Gill. Yeah, except for that Nebraska lost a few times and just barely finished ranked in the top 25. Not exactly what a number one team should do. The Nebraska Cornhuskers, the most overrated team in modern college football. Hey, it's not my opinion. I'm not the one saying it. Those are just the facts. Hey, next week on the show, we have got another full jam-packed week. The NFL is rolling along. College football is just going to get more and more interesting. And Major League Baseball, yeah, we actually might talk some Major League Baseball. We actually might get down to some, you know, postseason talk. Talk some of the teams. Talk some of the playoff chances. We might actually be talking some Major League Baseball. I know. Try to keep yourself together. We'll try to do what we can. Hey, if you get the chance, if you could head over to wherever it is that you download the podcast, give us a quick 5-star rating and a review. We would appreciate that so much. It just helps us get seen by a few more listeners. And as you know, if you've been with the podcast for very long, as you know, the bigger the show gets, the better it gets. If you would like to reach out to us, got a question, got a comment, got some feedback, don't really like my list that I put together, mad that I put Nebraska at number one. Again, I told you, it's not my pick. That's just how it is. Feel free to email us, dailydosesports@gmail.com. That is D-A-L-Y, dailydosesports@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter or Facebook. Have to say thank you to Dylan Brooks for stopping by and talking some NFL with us. Always appreciate you coming in. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week. Have a great week, everybody.